Hi, and welcome to Gamers Explain. I'm Krolog. Today, I have for you my interview with White Knight. It's about half an hour, and following that, there will be a meme of the week, some accented action news, and then some follow-up, some Krolokian lore. But this is a very special Krolokian lore, in that it will be about Gamers Explain itself. So, thank you for joining me today, and now I present White Knight. Hi, and welcome to Gamers Explain. I'm Krolok, and I have with me White Knight. Hello.
Hi.
Your username, White Knight, is six letters. And it occurs to me, being the somewhat of an internet troll that I am, but you could also pronounce it Whitnit or White Knit.
Or whatnot. I get that a lot.
What not? That's a good one too. Yeah. I assume that you intend White Knight.
It is. It is White Knight.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself and how you found tabletop role-playing games? I can see behind you that you've got a pretty long-lived collection of hardback books.
I have been collecting for about 40 years. About 42 years, actually, now. I started back in 78 when I was living overseas with my parents. My father was in the Air Force. And a friend of mine, his grandmother, won the Holmes Edition Basic in a bingo game. And he brought it over and said, let's play this. And so I got elected GM, and I've been dungeon mastering ever since.
That's interesting. Your father made you the first dungeon master?
Oh, no, my friend did.
Oh, your friend. Sorry. Yeah.
But my father did play with us and does. In fact, he plays with us every other Saturday night. I run a campaign with him through Foundry.
Wow.
He is in his 80s now, and he still plays.
Yeah, when I was younger in the 90s, I worked on an Air Force base here in Canada as a defense contractor. And it turned out at that time that most of my gaming community were people in their 50s and 60s. I was gaming regularly with people who are grandparents, and just not at all the normal experience that that the stereotype would lead us to believe, right?
Yeah, it's definitely different than what you see depicted elsewhere.
Yeah, I haven't asked this question before, but have you watched any of the TV shows recently where they've played, for example, Dungeons and Dragons on screen, like in Big Bang Theory or Stranger Things?
Yes.
Isn't it weird?
Yes, I have.
Isn't it weird how badly they get the rules?
Yes.
They're not even close. Like, what game are you playing?
My wife pointed that out when it came on Big Bang. She said, what are they playing? Because it's not Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah. Now, here's a question I didn't ask you in advance to think about, but somebody recently asked me why I'm not asking people like you about your family gaming. For example, it sounds like your wife knows something about Dungeons and Dragons. Does she play, or does she
game? She does play.
Yeah.
She's been playing almost as long as she's known me, and we've been married for 34 years this year.
Okay. So you taught her to play, or she had already played before you?
I taught her to play.
Yeah. Okay.
And that was before we got married. And then when we got married, I told her, I said, you know that I'm a gamer and that's the way life is going to be. And she said she could live with it. So
yeah,
she enjoys playing once in a while. She likes to roll the dice.
Yeah.
She's not so much a role player as a roller.
Yeah. My own wife, we've been married almost 20 years, but she gamed a decade before we met. She started gaming in high school with her friends. And but a lot of the people in our communities kind of either met through gaming or taught each other how to game. So mostly we game with other couples, which is another unusual experience.
Yeah, different genre altogether.
Yeah. So how did you find play-by-post gaming? And what drove you to look for that?
It originally started with the D&D listserv many, many years ago. I ran games on there. And when that died, I moved over to Paizo and their forum.
Yeah.
And I play over there. I played over there for several years. And then I got to looking around and I said, there's got to be more. And I was looking initially for a writing-based Star Trek game where you would, there weren't any hard and fast rules. Everybody would just submit a piece that they've written and they'd string it all together. And I found Gamers Plane and I thought, well, this is a pretty neat little community and I like the setup. So I started playing and I found that I really have a lot of friends on there now.
Yeah. So when did you join Gamers Plane then? I could probably just look this up.
That was about a year ago, maybe a year and a half.
Yeah. And when you played on Paizo, I've looked at Paizo as being a pretty large community, obviously. And they play all kinds of crazy things there, not just Pathfinder.
They do.
Is that what largely you played on Paizo's forums or?
For a while, I played only largely Pathfinder because I was a venture captain for Paizo for a little bit.
Okay.
But then I stepped away from that. And when I stepped away from that, I started to branch out into other games. So I run just about anything. I prefer the old stuff, but I'm fairly competent with the new stuff as well.
Yeah. I've been playing a lot of OSR, as they call it now. Old style games, but generally some of them will have quite modern mechanics, but more of a flash in the pan kind of rules rather than detailed list of use cases. And maybe it's because I play so much on play by post rather than live gaming leads me to that. I'm not sure.
I play by post and I play live. I have four live games that I play. One on Wednesday nights, I run a GURPS game. And I do that opposite a friend who runs a Fate game. And then on Saturday nights, I'm either running a game with my father and my brother and his daughter, or I'm playing in a game that a friend of mine is running. And then on Friday nights, I run a homebrew Pathfinder game.
Wow.
And that's about all my wife will let me do because anything more than that, I'm afraid she'd divorce me.
Now, these are all live games in person.
They are live games in person. The only one that's exception is the alternating Saturday night game, and that's played by necessity through the Forge.
Yeah. Or the Foundry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the participants, my brother is in Washington, D.C. with his daughter. And my father is in Georgia. And then I have another player who lives in Alabama.
Yeah. So long road trips for a game.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not that I haven't done that.
Yeah. No, that's true. I remember driving 4.5 hours to play Vampire, the Masquerade, back in the 90s. I had a friend that I played with, and then he moved, and I moved. But then he ran this Vampire game, and he's like, you know, my players are a bunch of nitwits. I need somebody to come in and school them. So we created this character for me, and it was a Sabbat game. So kind of the evil side of Vampire, if you're familiar with the lore.
Yeah.
And so I just come in to basically be a disciple from Mexico City and just get all the players acting on behalf of the main church. But and we'd game like 30 hours straight, you know, no sleep, nothing like that. Just keep gaming, then pass out and drive home.
I remember those days.
Yeah.
When I was stationed in California, I also joined the Air Force. And when I was stationed out in California, where we lived, it was an hour to anywhere. I mean, we were literally out in the desert and it was 30 minutes to the base. And then it was an hour to the nearest town. But we made the trek every Friday night to go to the game shop And we would go to the shop and play for a few hours, crash at a friend's house downtown, go back to the shop, play for a little longer.
Yeah.
We played usually the entire weekend.
Yeah, that's crazy, eh? Like, what other hobbies are there that kind of evoke that, right? Yeah. Here's a question I prepped you with, which is, do you have a funny or memorable moment in play by post? Something that really kind of stands out?
Memorable would be Blix the Necromancer. He was on the TSR boards, and he came to me and said, I want to play a Necromancer. And I said, I have no problem with that. You can play one. And he said, well, I want it to be different. I want to be completely blind.
Oh.
So I said, okay, I have no issue with that. If you're willing to put up with the problems associated with it, then we can work. So he built his blind Necromancer. He had a bat familiar that, of course, that worked in his favor because the bat could use its sonar and he could use his empathy to connect with the bat. And this was back in the days of 2E. And he had a Braille spell book that he used to study from. He was a really interesting character.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a game recently where gamers playing user Bowl of Spinach played a blind character. And it was a horror game. So at one point they fall in this hole and her character is like, doesn't know what's going on. She can't see anything. She can't really hear anything. She can sort of hear that there's some movement. So she uses her cell phone and takes pictures and then texts them to the other player, right? So then when the other player sees the pictures and like the crazy, like horror based creatures that were in the darkness with her, you know, everybody just kind of freaked out. It was a really good moment.
Yeah.
So you've been playing a lot of games. You've been playing a lot of different places. Do you have a game that you would consider like a dream game that you're chasing, like an ultimate experience that you'd really like to have in play by post?
I'd like to finish my homebrew campaign and play in that. It's proving difficult because of all the lore and stuff that I'm having to put into place because I'm trying to build the entire world rather than just a small portion of it. But my dream game would be to finish that up and get people to play in that and let them enjoy that.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, world building is such a rewarding experience.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. What's one of the things that, if you were to describe your homebrew world in, you know, a sentence or two, what would make it stand out?
It's a world where a cataclysm triggered the migration of humans. The dwarves were born from the stone. The elves actually came from the stars. They're an alien race that came to the world. And then the humans once lived clustered in one area. And then a cataclysm occurred that sank that continent and they all scattered to the four winds.
No, oh, interesting. Yeah. I had a similar setup for a Bronze Age game once set in D&D. That the humans had all kind of just been chased off the last continent, got into boats, and what few of them survived on the new continent were essentially, you know, Stone Age or Bronze Age barbarians. Yeah.
Generia started out as a generic campaign world, hence the name, to put all the modules that didn't have a home back in the day.
Right.
And it was just my world where to put them. And over the years, it has grown and morphed into its own campaign setting now. And I hope to eventually get it published, but we'll see where that goes.
Yeah. There, it seems to be a lot of those out there. Like there must be quite an appetite for them, for, you know, that sort of pre-built you know, defined world where there's all kinds of places for people to explore, but lots of stuff they don't have to build from scratch. Yeah.
Right. I think that's the key, is they don't have to build it from scratch. They have something they can build on.
Yep. Yeah. So where does your username come from?
That comes from the days of BBSing, believe it or not.
Yeah.
BBSs were a bulletin board service. It's the pre-internet. We used to use our modems to call one another on regional bulletin boards. And I was originally Karaman Majir on the local boards. And over the years, it occurred to me that using a copyrighted character name can get you into all kinds of trouble. So I created the White Knight persona, and I've been using it ever since, the Knight of the White Rose.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I was involved in BBSs a little bit before the internet rendered them obsolete, and actually dated somebody I met through a BBS at one point, which is like, you know, text-based Tinder, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've been playing on bulletin boards for quite a while. What do you think there's one thing every play-by-post user should know about the experience?
I think it's quality over quantity. Of course, you want to keep the game moving, but I don't worry if somebody takes a few days to post, because I figure they're going to give me more quality posts that way, and we're going to get a better game as a result of it, as opposed to just logging on, posting a quick sentence that says, yeah, I agree, and then moving on. If they take the time to build a post that's worthy of reading, then they'll get integrated into the game more. It'll become a more interactive experience for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, maybe one way it was described to me is that when you post, you should leave something for the other players and the GM to respond to.
Right.
And create a dialogue rather than just answer a question. Yeah.
It's something I'm learning to do myself and striving to do it. I miss out on a few occasions, but I am striving to get better at it.
Yeah. Well, I know, like, we're currently playing this Pathfinder game, which is in many ways a dungeon crawl, or a series of dungeon crawls nested together, because a lot of it's The Mummy's Mask by Paizo, and for those who aren't you and I, and Pathfinder does a really good job of creating interesting dungeons, but they are dungeons, and it's not a really optimal experience on play-by-post. There's not a lot of role-playing to be done as you explore rooms.
Right.
There's some, and I think you guys are doing a pretty good job of bringing your characters to life, despite that.
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm still getting a feel for Isoret, but she's growing.
Well, one of the comments that came out recently was that Ikid in some ways bought your character as a trap finder.
And and all that.
And one of the things I thought about when I saw that is, I've been kind of trying hard not to do that, because that takes away some of your agency and some of your character's primary mechanical build, right?
So yeah.
What do you feel about that? You don't want to describe, I searched this wall, I searched the ceiling, I searched the floor, but where's a happy medium for play-by-post, do you think?
I think just assuming a general, you know, we come up on a door, I'm going to check it for traps kind of thing is good. Anything more than that, I would want some control to be able to say, you know, yeah, I'm going to look at this and examine it. But if it's just we come to a door or a doorway or something that looks suspicious, then I would say go ahead and bother.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what I'm trying to do, is that if it's obvious, like checking a door for traps, I'll just do that. I'll just roll in secret or assume you take 20. And but if it's something more abstract, like searching a room for secret doors, I want people to tell me that they're doing that.
Yeah.
Just give all that stuff away.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Where do you generally post? Are you still working?
I am not. I am retired. Okay. On disability. And my wife is also disabled. She's mostly blind.
Oh.
She has about 10% of her vision left. So most of my day is spent helping her.
Yeah.
But we both work for a local convention. I'm the game room director and she's the director of the con.
Oh, okay.
And so there's a lot of work involved there and I have to help her with emails and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So play by post wouldn't be a very satisfying experience for her then.
No, it isn't.
No. Yeah. So one of the questions I'm interested in is where people post. But if you are generally at home for most of your day, that's probably where you're doing it.
Yeah, it's at home.
Yeah.
I used to post when I was working. I did post a lot from work. That was back in the days of the TSR boards, and I was pretty active there. I would sneak posts here and there on my lunch break and on my coffee breaks.
Yeah. When you were posting that way, did you still post on the weekends and the evenings as well?
I did.
Okay.
I would go home and usually catch up on anything I hadn't seen during the day. And then the weekends, I was usually online, I would say about 8 to 10 hours out of the day, unless I had something else I had to do.
Yeah. There's a fair number of people that seem like they post during the workday. Like they only post from their work computers, which is interesting. And lots of people have very complex jobs or a lot of autonomy or independence or so.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's fine, you know, from a work perspective, but when they get home, they're not posting. So it's interesting.
Yeah, that is unique. I would think they would post more on their off time than they would on their work time, but
yeah.
I guess we all need something to distract us from our work.
Yeah. And I think that leads to why weekends are so quiet is that if enough people are only posting a week and they're working a Monday to Friday work week, then
weekends
just become a barren desert.
Sort of like Christmas holiday was. Yeah. There was almost everything shut down over the holiday.
Isn't that funny, eh? And this is the kind of time in history where people are traveling a lot less, one would expect.
Yeah, because of the pandemic.
Right. So you're generating Generia, this homebrew world. Do you all often play in intellectual property worlds, like a Star Wars world or Star Trek?
I have. We've played Star Wars, Star Trek, Greyhawk and Forgotten Realms, and there's one other, and I can't think now what it is. I had it earlier, and I can't think of it, but I've played in intellectual properties before.
Yeah. What's your sense on integrating the main characters in those intellectual properties and the plot lines that follow into your own world? Or do you just kind of find a space that is untouched by, say, the Lord of the Rings main quest lines?
It depends on the world and the players. Sometimes we have actually played those characters if the characters are available as characters written up, or we made them up ourselves and played them. Other times I have had them integrated into the world as part of the lore, but the players may never see them.
Right.
And then in one instance, a Star Trek game or a Star Wars game that I ran, D6 Star Wars game, the players came into Mos Eisley and they witnessed a murder. An alien murdered a man in the corner of the cantina. And then a few minutes later, they heard a ruckus in the street and there was a Wookiee going mad in the street and they had to put him down. And that kind of told them immediately, you know, this is not going to be your ordinary Star Wars campaign. You guys are going to be the stars, not them.
Yeah. Interesting. That's cool. I know I had some friends that played a Star Wars game, and the very first thing they did was try and assassinate Darth Vader. Like, to just, you know, change the entire, like, future history of the canon.
That's fun. Games where canon exists and can be changed, like time travel games. Time travel games are very interesting to me, and I enjoy them a lot. I did a one time travel game I ran many years ago where the players detected a disturbance in the timeline, and they went back, and it was that John F. Kennedy had survived. And so what eventually ended up happening was they had to do the killing and then frame Lee Harvey Oswald for it.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was very interesting.
Yeah. It reminds me of the Disney's Marvel show Loki, where they get involved in what is it called, the it's not time police, it's the anyway, this organization that polices the timelines and snubs people that, you know, break away from established pathways.
I enjoyed Loki. I thought it was a pretty good series.
So yeah, one of the problems I have, and the reason I asked this question about intellectual properties, is I really like the show Firefly, like a lot of people. And the one time I tried to kind of replicate it, it immediately fell apart because I think everybody wanted to be the Firefly cast rather than just a different spaceship with a different crew.
Right.
And so without that crew and without that spaceship, it just didn't feel at all the same.
Yeah, I think when you've got something like that, when the crew has an established rapport and you've been with them for at least a season, I think you start to develop a feel where it's difficult to replicate it on your own.
Yeah,
because they are such a varied group.
Yeah, similarly, I've run Supernatural, the role-playing game, a couple times. The first time I had Sam and Dean Winchester basically show up, give the party, the new party, their first mission, and then blaze away in their Impala. And that was the end of it, right? There was no more interaction with the crew. It was kind of like a passing of the baton.
Yep. I've done that before, too.
Yeah.
I did a DC Heroes campaign that I'm running on the Paizo boards right now. They see guest appearances from Wonder Woman and Superman every once in a while and other heroes, but they know they're there, but they're in the background. They aren't the focus of the adventures.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not very familiar with DC Comics, but it often seems when I have picked one up, the very first thing they do is they need to find a way to shelve Superman.
Yes.
So he can't just solve all the problems for everybody else, and then the comic unfolds. It's like
Star Trek. I've done the mission in space a lot.
Yeah. Star Trek's another one where it seems like, especially Next Generation, the first thing they do is figure out a way why their sensors don't work. It's like, there's
the holodeck goes nuts.
Yeah, there's interference. We can't use any of our technology, so now we have to just play baseball on the holodeck or something. Yeah. So another question I've asked a few people is, do you watch sports?
No, I do not.
So I'm not taking you away from the NFL games today?
Nope. I am an emphatic no on sports. I have zero interest.
And that's, I think the reason I started asking this question was that's my experience from my role-playing groups is almost nobody watches sports. And it's just seemed like a really, I don't know, maybe the stereotype of the, you know, the basement dwelling nerd leans into that and you'd expect it. But I've played, well, anyway, with a lot of different people and Just the current crop of gamers I'm with don't have no have zero interest at all in any sport.
One of my players does follow sports. He follows baseball and football, but he's not avid about it. And my father is an avid baseball follower. He loves baseball.
What's his team?
The Braves.
Okay.
He loves to watch baseball games. And he watches the college football game. He supports Georgia. But a lot of times on Saturday nights, if there's a game on, I can hear it running in the background because he's watching the game while he's playing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I have had hockey finals on once during a game when the Calgary Flames were in the playoffs. And at least one of the other players in my game was a fan, so we had it muted, but playing D&D and watching hockey as well.
Yeah, definitely been there. I've run D&D while friends are watching programs on the television, a favorite program of some sort.
Yeah. But obviously, that's a lot easier to manage on play by post.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It gets to be a nuisance when you do it in real life.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's like people watching videos on their phone and it's like, it's your turn. It's your, what are you going to do? Oh, sorry.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have one who does that. He's always watching a video on his phone and he's pretty good about keeping an ear out for what's going on. But every once in a while, we have to jostle him and remind him that he is playing and it's his turn.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a modern kind of evolution of the human brain that we're just so heavily distracted all the time that when we're not distracted, we feel like we miss it. So if I'm watching TV, I often have one or two devices with me. Like I might be reading a book, catching up on play-by-post, and watching TV all at the same time.
I seldom watch TV anymore. I watch Jeopardy. It's about the only show I watch with any regularity. And I watch Grey's Anatomy and Station 19 because my wife loves them and I keep her up to breath of what's going on. If she can't see the screen,
right,
then I'll describe for her what's happening on the show. So by default, I watch those two.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's about the only TV watching I really do.
And then you have to pay attention, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you very much for your time today.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. I enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah. So I'll just stop recording here. Hello, this is Crawlock. I just cannot do accents today. So save you from some horrible, horrible accents. Instead, I will talk to you about, in this action news segment, some changes to the site that have come across very quickly. So this is just very recent, came out in the last week or so. So here is a Pathfinder 2 character that I had, and this is Fern in Natkinson's Pathfinder 2 game. It's basically a Magic University kind of thing. So this is basically how I created the sheet, or maybe Nat made the template. Some various statistics, everything you kind of see. This is all really great. I mean, I was really happy with these tables that Adam and the others built. Organization, you can see we've got these modifiers, skills, proficiency, like this is all just really well laid out. Proficiencies, we have spoilers that we can expand and show things. this was all really great, but it wasn't good enough for them, so they've changed things. And here at the top of the character sheet is something new in that these segments that are underlined here are editable, and when you edit them, they auto-save. So before, if I wanted to change any of this stuff, I'd have to edit it, then I have to go through the BB code, which is laid out really badly. But this is all just live, right? So I could change the speed to 30. There, it's done, it's saved. Like, it's just like a live sheet. Like, if I went out of here, right? And then I search for Fern again. Go back into the sheet. There, speed is 30. I can change it back to 25. Okay. Yeah, these proficiencies. Now watch the modifier. If I make this person from trained to expert, bam, even highlighted to show me that it was changing it. If I go back to trained, bam. So what is this modifier? The modifier for perception is 4. Here's a little handy table. For trained in Pathfinder 2, your bonus is equal to your level plus 2. Okay. My level's 1 plus 2 is plus 3, right? And perception is a wisdom. So you can see I've got a minus 1 for my wisdom. So level plus 2 for being trained, minus 1 gives you the plus 2. If I change my wisdom to 10, see the wisdom jumped up, the perception jumped up to plus 3. So this is all pretty remarkable stuff. The code behind it is not that onerous either. Like, it's just not all that terrible. Other things like this other equipment, features and abilities. So I've got these are abilities, which means that I could actually just drop them into a game just by clicking a button, and it would just put this whole pack under, and this whole feat description would go into the game. If you wanted that, or spells, I could put a full description of Tanglefoot other than just a cantrip, and then I could just into the game put a click a button, and it just drops that as a spoiler into the game. These are editable, so I don't have to go into the code again. I can just go into here, and you can see that you put these little pound sign at the beginning, and it starts the very first spoiler, and then days is the second. So so looking at the base spell stuff, it's just all that stuff that was at the top, then days. And so it's easy to change. You don't have to, again, go in and edit things. Yeah. Anyway, so this is a pretty huge change. How does it actually work? Well, that's a good question. Let's take a look. So each of those editable fields has this little notation. So open the square brackets, and maybe I can make this a little bit bigger. So you can see there's, like, for level, there's a square bracket, an underscore, a variable name, and then the result, right? So class is here, P class sorcerer. We looked before about wisdom. See, there is whiz equals 8. And so if we go later into the perception bonus, this is all pretty ugly because I've zoomed it up so much, but here's the perception part of the table. There's a value. Mpercept is equal to, you see, plus d20 bonus whiz. So it picks up the wisdom bonus. And then there's some math about level and training. And see, this A equals 1 out of 4 is the code for the 4 checkboxes. So there's 1 is checked, 4. But for Willie, you can see I'm an expert. So there's two checked out of four. So it saved the values of things you've entered as text. And that's just all part of the code. But anyway, you can see that it isn't trivial for somebody who isn't really to get their sleeves up or roll their sleeves up and go to it. But if I, yeah, so you can see this lore, these two lore skills, he's made it an editable field. So I could, you know, click that and bang, I added Savannah lore, which is the character's focus. So I could click on the thing when it's not in edit mode, and it would allow me to, you know, enter something else like alchemy or something like that. Then if I went back in, it would include alchemy as the thing. Let's get rid of that because this is actually a character I'm playing. Yeah, how's that? Oh, I'm an expert in intimidate. Bam, plus nine. I'm actually pointing at the screen. That's how excited I am. Okay. Yeah, so this is a game changer. I mean, these character sheets, once they're in place, you don't really have to go in and edit them as a player. You can just use them, right? And this kind of looks like how we'd expect character sheets to work on the internet, I think. You know, we don't want to go in and write a whole bunch of code. And I was pretty happy to do that before because I'm not afraid of code, but it does create a barrier, I think. So thank you very much, Adam, Old X Steel Skin, and Vague GM, and I don't even know who all was involved in the testing and the creation of these things, but there is a strong development team at Gamers Plane who have, because the site is open source, decided that, you know what, they can make some pretty impressive changes that make life a lot easier and a lot more interesting to play. Now, let me just show you something first. So if we go to, don't count the number of games I'm in. This is just, you know, this is the worst kind of management of time skills. So this is the game that Fern is in. If I go to character creation, and now, so here's a post. I'm just going to put haven't asked anybody's permission to do this. So at the bottom here, we've got, there's the posting window. I can add roles. And then below that was this button that said Fern. Now, when I click it, it loads up her character sheet. It goes through. And so you've just seen all this stuff. Now I can just click this button. That's a clickable object. And what happens is it adds the perception role right there. That's the kind of the purpose of all that, right? If I want to do a spear attack, okay, this has all been added in, so I can just spear attack. So I just click that button. If I go up to the top, to the window, you can see now it's added spear attack damage and it's giving me the roll and the damage roll. So, I mean, I could just click post and bam, I rolled pretty well, or Fern did. So, anyway, that's, I'm just going to delete that. That is what I wanted to show you today. And now I'm glad I'm really glad I didn't stick with a very, very bad Irish accent, and because I would have run out of steam. Anyway, thank you for all the people behind the scenes who made that functionality come alive. And, I'm looking forward to building some templates as well for games like Savage Worlds and others where we can make that technology more easily accessible for users who just want to play and don't want to worry too much about building these tools. Anyway, thank you. Hey, welcome back. So I promised you that I would show you some inside information, some Krolokian lore about Gamers Plane itself. So first I'll say that when I first conceived of this, I thought it seemed odd that people weren't doing this already. And once I got the idea in my head, I couldn't let it go. And so I began with interviews, first with Len and then with others. And well, you've seen that progress. So what was I intending through this whole thing? I don't really know. It just seemed like there was a conversation to be had about play by post that just wasn't happening. And so we've had those conversations, I think. What's left to explore? That I'm not really sure of. So let me show you what we instead of explaining what comes next, I'll show you where we've come from. So just give me a second here. Here's the analytics that we get from YouTube as a content creator. There's all kinds of different things we can look at, but let's look at this one, which is views by video. So you can see that when we started off in the very first ones, obviously people who find this channel for the first time, click the first video first. So you can see that Krolok versus Len currently has 336 views, which means that people have watched something like 41 hours worth of content of Len and my smiling faces. As time has gone on, you can see that the total viewer dropped a little bit or a lot. But the total view time seems to be hanging around 30 or 40 hours per video. Then we get to some of these other ones are like just helpful videos, but the actual videos of interviews seem to be, these are sorted downwards. So you can see that there are a fair number of interesting statistics. Almost 3,000 total views. People have watched these videos for a total of 473 hours. 56 subscribers. This is all pretty great. And I really appreciate all of that. Some of the least popular ones, mostly these are tips and tricks and recent videos that I just put up in the last few weeks. Anyway, so that's pretty cool. These analytics are just really kind of neat stuff. geography. I don't think any of this stuff really works. United States, Canada. Yeah, so mostly it looks like people who have geotagged themselves, mostly from the States. Some British, this is probably all Adam. Philippines, I think we know who that one or two people are. Canada, so that's pretty awesome. Vietnam, viewer age, I don't think this is really, I don't think people enter that kind of stuff all the time. Subscription status. Are people watching that are subscribed? That's pretty neat. No idea what this pattern means, but generally, that's, like I said, that's pretty interesting. About half the people that are watching are not subscribers, and the other half are. Anyway, so it's kind of cool. I'm pretty happy with the way things turned out, and that people have donated 473.7 hours of their eyeballs to watch my resting introvert face and well, 50% me and 50% other people mostly. So thank you very much for joining me, Krawlok, on Gamers Explain. And will there be a season 3? I'm not really sure. At this point, I don't really have any plans for what kind of content that I would include in that. And without generating any kind of interest, when you probably see this kind of pattern here that, like my viewers, the total number of views has declined over time. And this period here up until January is all just repeats of new video of old videos, whereas up here into January and through March, we're actually getting new content being generated, and you see the video views is slowly increasing. But I think we've had a lot of great conversations, and I'm a wiser man for having them. So thank you very much. And if there is a future to Gamers Explain, then you'll know where to find me. So once again, I'm Krawlok, and this has been Gamers Explain.